Can you give us a quick overview of what this PREP Act is?
Well, the PREP Act addresses a whole bunch of different areas about teachers, from evaluations to tenure to teacher effectiveness ratings to setting up a teacher recruitment fund, a teacher mentor program. It covers a lot of area.
Okay. Now, is that maybe why some of it was so controversial in the drafts that have been released? Some of that is still there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think probably the most controversial part is using the student achievement scores within the teacher evaluations. There was huge pushback when the drafts were released, but there are a lot of states that are using, you know, student growth in teacher evaluations. And the State Department, in their work with teacher effectiveness, they're working individually with school districts to craft their own teacher effectiveness plans. And those were including some component of student achievement growth. It's just not really well known and well talked about because it's going out one district at a time.
Okay. So from my understanding, there were some teachers and working with the State Department, they were already sort of on a similar path. Is that right? Is this redundant?
In some ways it is. I think it sort of short circuits some of the work that the State Department has been doing for the last couple of years. What they were trying to do, from what I understand from talking with people at the State Department, is they really wanted to work with the people in the district, the teachers in the district, and the leaders in the district to say, what is it that you want from your teachers? What do teachers need to be doing for your students instead of making a cookie cutter plan for each district? And so this in some ways short circuits it, but it really backs off of the first draft, which had a lot of details in it. This still leaves a lot of discretion to the State Department and to the local districts. So I would think that that would satisfy some of the critics.
Right. I noticed that the bill, and granted, this could change, but I noticed that the bill, some of it was fairly specific, but some of it was still pretty vague. You know, 25% of a teacher's evaluation has to be based on basically on student test scores.
Right.
But how those test scores are going to be analyzed is still yet to be determined, correct?
That's correct. And it actually, as I was reading over the bill, what it says is the State Department will select a student growth model, okay? There are some student growth models already out there, also called value-added measures, or VAMs, okay? You'll hear that term. It's not used in the bill, but that's what they're known as out in the education world. And the problem is making sure you have the right test and that you're, and that the it's a statistical thing. It's for researchers, you know, who can say, yes, this is a valid measure of student growth, and yes, the teacher is the one who affected this change in growth. That's a tough thing right now. There are a lot of experiments going on, but nobody has really found the one that seems to satisfy all of the problems with the models.
Yeah, there are so many variables involved in this, right? I mean, is it really fair to, based on test scores at all, should test scores even really be part of this conversation? And I guess most people would say yes. What do you think about that?
Well, I think in the education world, the resounding answer is no, that there are just too many variables that can't be measured in one test score in one day. And I think this bill tries to, again, appease some of that by saying it's only 25% of the evaluation. And the State Department's own teacher effectiveness models that they were working on with districts did have, you know, 15-20%. So of that teacher's evaluation being based on student growth. So there was some matching of ideals, I guess, between the State Department and the legislature. But teachers are rightfully concerned about how those test scores will be used. We as a society have really abused test scores over the last 10 to 12 years. And I would say that I'm probably one of them. Many years ago, when I looked at test scores, I thought, this is it. This is the measure. But I've come to learn differently.
It's not that simple, huh?
No, it's not.
And the pendulum may be sort of swinging back away from all the testing. I mean, that's definitely true in terms of public perception, right?
Absolutely. But I do think that the public eats up these teacher effectiveness ratings, which is what these test scores will ultimately, you know, the PREP Act says, okay, here's the teacher evaluation, here's some basic components that have to be included, and then at the end of it, you're going to come up with a teacher effectiveness rating. The bill also says that each school must publish its teacher effectiveness ratings on its website, okay? Not by teacher. You're not going to have the names of teachers, but you're going to have like a distribution, right? You're going to know on these five levels, You got four teachers that were significantly below expectations. I mean, if you think of it as a bell curve, it's really not a bell curve. It's usually like a left tail. It has a name, but you know, a lot of it is stacked towards effective teachers. But I can see where the public will say, you know, a mom going to a principal saying, I see you have four significantly below expectation teachers. Please make sure that my child is not assigned to that person's class. So I see the potential for really tough conversations to be had, which I think those tough conversations need to be had. But bridging that information gap between the public and the school and what those ratings really mean, I think that's going to be a tough conversation.
Mm. And I understand one of the more controversial parts of this bill, something that people were upset about when it was just in draft form and not filed yet, now that it's been filed, the tenure aspect, changing the required number of years of service from 3 to 5 in order for a teacher to get tenure.
Right.
Teachers are fairly, I think it's safe to say that teachers are not particularly happy with that provision. Would you agree?
Yeah, but I have heard a lot of them say that it's time for tenure reform, that it shouldn't be so easy to get tenure, that this automatic tenure really doesn't help improve the profession or the perception of the profession. So what this says is, yes, the number, if you're hired after January 1st, 2017, it'll take 5 years to get tenure, and your last 3 years you have to have earned a rating of, I think it satisfies, exceeds, or significantly exceeds expectations in order to earn tenure. So if in the three of your last 3 years, you know, your final 3 years of your 5-year tenure piece, if by year three if you're not rating satisfies expectations, you're going to have a hard time earning tenure, you know, which could say, okay, well, maybe then you're not cut out to be a teacher. But again, it's that other 75%, okay? The PREP Act only says 25% of it has to be based on this.
Right.
What's that other 75%?
Right. And I saw in the bill there's student surveys.
Yes.
So Johnny's mad at you that day because you took away his phone.
It could be. It could be. And that the student survey piece is a piece that teachers are worried about. You know, we've got Rate My Teachers, Rate My Professors, right?
Right.
You know, these sort of mechanisms that kids give feedback. But student surveys are being used in other states, and they appear to be somewhat valid. They are not as flippant as a lot of teachers were worried about them being, and they have narrowed it to grades 3 and up. In the first draft, it was like basically everybody would take a survey, and parent surveys were included in the first one. So parent surveys have been taken out of this, and, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what the survey – there are a couple of companies that are doing them, and they seem to be reputable companies. They have a lot of years of history. So, it doesn't specify which company will be doing them, but there are a few to choose from.
So State Senator Del Marsh, it seems like he comes out with a pretty significant education-related bill every year. This is one of them. Do you think he's shooting for some sort of legacy? Does he have a quota of some kind of controversial and significant education bills each year?
Well, I think history will say yes. He has pushed some significant education reform pieces, as has Representative Terry Collins in the House. So I think this will certainly go down as one of those historic pieces. I mean, this is evaluating teachers is a huge piece. We know that what matters most inside a classroom is great teaching. So this really gets to the heart of how do you determine what a great teacher, who a great teacher is, and what do great teachers do, and how do you rate them, and how do you make sure that they're properly compensated? You know, also in this bill is this piece about the teacher recruitment program, where it's I've heard teachers say, well, it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of money, and no one would turn down money. Teachers haven't had a significant raise in 8 years, okay? So any money has got to be better than status quo. But what this says is for $2,500, if you go to you'll get a one-time bonus if you are going to a school that is a failing school on that list, or if More than 80% of the children are receiving free or reduced price meals.
Okay, so meant to sort of fill vacancies in
right.
places where it's hard to hire
critical
teachers.
Critical teacher shortages, yes. But it's a $2,500 one-time bonus. And if you're still there in your fourth year, if you stay there the fourth year, you'll get a $1,000 bonus. Okay, so there is some money there. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, who's going to turn up their nose at any money? Will it be enough? This bill does not talk about a pay raise. That is going to be a separate bill. That's a separate line item in the budget. It's going to be something totally different. So that still has yet to be determined.
And I saw in the bill that there's a sort of a rewards regime being set up for schools that do well according to these tests. And we're talking about ACT tests, basically, at this
right.
point, right?
Right.
Okay, so what's that about?
Well, a number of years ago, Representative Terry Collins passed a bill, I want to say 2012, and it was about a school grading bill, giving schools an A through F grade, and that was supposed to be implemented long before now, but because we changed tests, we went from the ARMT, the Alabama Reading and Mathematic Test, to the ACT Aspire. There was really no way to fairly give grades. We didn't have anything to grade on, you know, if you're looking at improvement. So all of that looks like it's going to be sped up, and that perhaps that grading system will be implemented sooner rather than later. And this legislative recognition program, legislative performance recognition program, that will be an award there in this bill, bill that was filed. They're appropriating $10 million for that, okay? And that money is to go to reward schools that are in the top 10%, okay?
Right. Based on ACT scores.
Really?
We're talking about
yeah.
ACT
We're
scores.
We're talking about achievement tests.
Yep.
Or if you've improved one letter grade. Now, you can't improve a letter grade until you've had a letter grade. So that really can't start until the A through F grading system is implemented.
Right. I noticed in one part of the bill, and this is, I only notice it because I've heard teachers talking about it, there's something called the Educators Liability Trust Fund, and it sort of jumped out at me in a very sort of complex and convoluted bill, but I saw this one subsection that said, you know, teachers will be informed, and I guess it's in writing, teachers will be informed of the Educators Liability Trust Fund. Right. What is that and why is it important?
Well, a few years ago, as the Alabama Education Association was being, I'm going to use the word dismantled because I don't know of a better word to use. I saw, you know, we watched as all of a sudden you couldn't have your dues taken directly from your paycheck, right? And then all of a sudden the Educators Liability Trust Fund was created in the legislature. It was initially funded with $5 million a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. And that was, you know, a lot of educators said they joined the AEA for that liability insurance. So I think as an effect of, whether it was intentional or not, I won't go to motive, I won't speak to motive, but this liability trust fund really took away the need for the AEA. So if I'm not a member of AEA to get my liability, why am I a member of AEA? So now there's this Educators Liability Trust Fund, and I think this statement is part of the reminder of, hey, you don't really need that educator association over there. We've got you covered. Beginning with this year, and they did go out, beginning this year, a statement, it was in a bill last year, mm-hmm. a law that was passed, a statement now goes to all educators saying what their salary is, what their benefits are, how much money their employer contributed to those benefits. How much total money was contributed to those benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than a W-2 would have. It's in a very simple, simply readable format where the teachers can really see. For instance, I saw one, a teacher had earned $57,000 on her salary schedule, but with benefits and all, in addition to what, you know, she put into the health insurance and retirement, it showed the employer's contributions, and it was really worth about $84,000, which I think was saying, it felt like a statement maybe that the legislature was making to say, hey, your salary really isn't only $59,000. You know, you're getting $84,000 in payment as a teacher. Mm. So this is one more explanation of that. And I mean, I think it's fair. I think you need to be able to know how much money your employers are spending on you, right? So that is that, but that's also spelled out in this bill, which I thought was interesting.
Kind of keeping it on there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. If you had to boil down the two or three most important parts of this bill as it's been filed as of today, what would those be?
Well, the way that it talks about teacher evaluations and that they must be done every year and that there must be two observations, it also covers principals and assistant principals too. I think that's extremely important because
it's been kind of ad hoc until now, I guess.
Well, there's been this system called Educate Alabama, and it was only implemented maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but it's sort of a 3-year rotation where you get, but each year teachers have to do a self-evaluation. Okay, so they're looking at the professional growth plan and where their weaknesses and their strengths are, and their administrators are supposed to be helping them with it. Whether or not that's actually happening, I don't know. There's no teacher effectiveness rating that comes as a result of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just internal, an employee evaluation.
Right. So from a state viewpoint, it's sort of hard to measure, a little squishy,
yes.
Maybe.
Oh, yes. Very, very. I mean, there's just no measurement that you can draw from it. So this, you know, the public loves ratings. They really do. The public eats these things up. They want to know that they've got effective teachers in their schools. And these concrete ratings, you know, teachers say they don't capture it all, but the public loves them. So that's this, you know, bigger conversation we all need to be having. Why do we love these ratings so much, and what do they mean to us as a public? Why are they so important? But that teacher evaluation by far is the biggest part of this bill. You know, there are a couple of extra little things in there. I like the fact that a teacher advisement committee is created. You know, I'm one of those people who likes committee meetings. I like deliberation. I like discussion. I want to see the conversation happen. So that would begin February 1st, 2017. There are 9 slots for teachers and 2 for principals. And when you consider that we've got 45,000 teachers, I don't know that 9 can really, you know, represent. But it's a start at having a regular conversation between legislators and educators. And I think that that's a necessary thing that we need to be doing in Alabama.
Right. I mean, you can't, just because you've flown in a plane doesn't make you a pilot or an air traffic controller, right?
Absolutely.
One more, let me backtrack a little bit. One more quick question. So I've spoken with some teachers, and there's some very prominent teachers who are very, this bill makes them nervous. The PREP Act makes them nervous. Do you see why that would be?
Yeah. I've seen some of that on Twitter, and I've seen it, you know, I've had some personal conversations with teachers. I think the piece that really makes them nervous, okay, so we've got these state assessments in reading and math and science. Science is only grades 5 and 7, okay? What test scores do we use for the people that are not using those state assessments? ACT Aspire, foreign language, music, art, what will
PE.
They...
PE. I noticed in the bill that there are a couple subsections about it, but they're fairly vague.
Oh, they are. They're vague, and they say, you know, the State Department will develop a list of approved methods to evaluate.
Right.
That's very squishy, to use your term. That is just, there have been problems with it in other states where they have tried to use some other form of an assessment, and it's not comparable. So you begin to wonder, well, will the teachers who are being, you know, rated with these state assessments, are they going to be rated more harshly and on sort of a higher maybe or an unfair standard based on if the PE teachers get to choose their own assessments?
It's certainly a different standard.
Yes, and I think that has caused problems in other states.
And isn't all this, you know, coming up with these new standards and these new formulas for ways to use and analyze and compare teachers by these test scores, isn't that a whole nother level of work for the state bureaucracy?
Yes. And I've heard that discussion to say, who is going to be doing all of this and how are the districts going to do it if they don't have the capacity already to do anything with Educate Alabama? And this is what the State Department was trying to do, I think, by going and working with individual districts one at a time. And it's not literally one at a time. It's maybe 30 or 40 at a time to try to say, you know, how do you want to measure teachers? What do you think teachers need to be doing in your district? And how are you going to measure it? And to get that buy-in, you know, instead of that top-down, you must, it's always better when you're working with professionals to get their buy-in. And there isn't a lot of effort in this bill to get buy-in. It's really just sort of, here, you must do this. And so it's then, if the bill goes through as it's written, and the State Department does have some leeway, and the locals, they can still look at that other 75%, that might be enough. But, you know, you can build hard feelings. You'd like to think we're all adults and we're not going to get hard feelings, but this is teachers' livelihood, you know, and this is their job. This is not something they do for fun or enjoyment. I mean, hopefully some of them are having fun and are enjoying it, but this is their livelihood. And there are a lot of families that are led by women who are working, and the majority of our teachers are women, which is why I say that. They're led by women. This is their sole income. And so it gets a little scary.
Thank you for coming in and going through the tornadoes and making the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for that opportunity. I appreciate it.